Logical Podcast. This is our last episode, and hopefully you've enjoyed our content so far.
The last episode of this legendary podcast that's going to save the world. Let's humbly start off with our topic.
This topic is sort of looking at the bright side of life, because we're looking at the topic of what we are already doing. So this would involve what have we already done, what are good steps. Do you have anything specific?
Mm-hmm. I kind of regret, fourth episode, I mentioned about the new fusion reactor that France is building. That's going to be much safer than our fission normal nuclear reactor that most of you will know. But that's going with international collaboration is being built and is expected to be operational in 2025, no, 6, 7, around that time. Yeah.
I just want to quickly say that this is actually a really interesting topic because nuclear reactors are a very controversial thing.
Yeah.
For example, my dad was a professional nuclear energy, and he was actually protesting against the production of a new nuclear power plant this Friday in the Netherlands.
Oh, really? How well informed do you rate your dad on this?
I mean, he's professional in the topics. He's pretty well informed. I'm quite interested in this new form, safer form of nuclear energy.
Yeah, in theory, it's not too bad. Of course, you get the waste material that's going to last for quite a long while. But mostly, that's not really the big problem. We've got the sufficient technology to safely bury it, where, it's not going to be dug up by tectonic plates or natural causes. Or we are also pretty good at making safe reactors now. But I mean, at a risk standpoint, I guess how repulsive it might be to people. Having lived through Russian Chernobyl accident and what happened in Hiroshima, but those two, the Chernobyl stuff was just bad human execution and standards and also design. But I'd be pretty confident that we can handle it pretty well these days, as long as we don't cheap out on the stuff. On our equipment and such.
I think these new types of sources of energy are quite a good topic to talk about in this episode, because obviously that's one of our main aims, as we talked about in the fifth episode, of reducing carbon dioxide emissions and greenhouse gas emissions in general. I actually, in one of my physics classes, talked about molten salt power plant. It's actually really interesting. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
I think I did, but I'm not sure if it's really profitable. I don't know. I'm not informed on this, so
I'm also not sure if that's the correct name.
Mm-hmm.
But it consists of a tower which is surrounded by a lot of mirrors reflecting the sun into the. The negative points of that would be that it takes up a lot of space.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's like a huge satellite dish almost that concentrates to one point.
And it's actually way more efficient than, for example, solar panels. However, obviously, it takes up a lot of space and is more expensive.
Also, somewhere that's constantly sunny. For that to happen.
Yeah. For example, there's one in Spain. What happens is that there's the receiver in the middle, which receives concentrated sunlight, and that heats the molten salt to over 540 degrees Celsius, and then goes into a thermal storage tank where it's stored. And then it actually maintains 98% thermal efficiency, and eventually it's pumped to a steam generator and can generate electricity.
Yeah, I know that US has a lot of them too. And the desert, of course. I mean, they've got unlimited source of desert.
If you have the sun and the room.
But solar panels are like generally good anywhere almost. Unless you're in like Antarctica where the sun is like only half there or less. I mean, you see like quite a lot of houses that have solar panels these days. Well, still in the minority. Keep in mind, but yeah. Even in cloudy places as Holland, you see solar panels on roofs. Going back to that nuclear and the nuclear discussion, a big argument is that, like, whether it's profitable to start making nuclear power plants, like, now. A lot of arguments against power plants are not really whether they're safe or not, but rather if we should just skip nuclear power plants and go straight to solar panels and windmills.
I mean, not only that, but there's also a lot of types. Obviously, we don't know if it's going to happen, so it's kind of a bet that you're taking. So what have we already done, or sort of what's happening? I think you touched on this previously, but I'm not sure. And that was the Dutch policies. One of those examples would be for policies against gas vehicles, just the encouragement of only electric boats and cars, as well as a limit at highways of only 100 kilometers per hour. Well, I say only, but quite a lot for the small country. As one of the reasons for that is the exponential use of fuel. Of an increased drag at higher speeds. So our third member will be joining in the discussion now.
So as you said, now there are already nuclear solutions, but people are a bit hesitant to its use because of past events, like what happened in Fukushima, which has caused its damage. There's a lot that is very positive that is happening. First of all, there's been a lot of raising awareness and education towards impacts of climate change and making everyone from a student to aware of these issues and its possibility of extreme harm to both them and the environment. So as an example, in many schools and IB schools, there is a subject where they talk about the impacts of environmental factors, rural, agricultural, then our social environment. Secondly, as you said, solutions already do exist. There are low-cost solar wind batteries that are available for mass use. They're available, but they're not used to its maximum potential, which is, I think, that is the main question. Currently, it's very hypothetical rather than realistic. Not all large governments, such as the United States, implement these, I guess, green initiatives that will reduce the impacts of climate change we are all committing to. Commitment is shown, such as in the Paris Climate Conference, where over 150 countries agreed to sign. However, some powerhouses, such as, again, the United States, has left. Just that. It is unfortunate, ironic, like in the League of Nations, United States is always a keystone. Lastly, public demand for change and climate change has been shown by the 6 million people that are for the global climate change strikes, just regular protesters. It's been recorded by the WWF report of 2018 that globally 6 million people have joined different protests or movements around the world, varying in cultures, languages. So it's all very hypothetical. We have the solutions and the plans, So there's a lot of goals and policies, but it's up to, I think, countries that have a global impact to be determined and implement the actions, I guess. So in the European Union, it's been agreed that they're trying to reduce by 20 the greenhouse gas emissions 20% by 2035. So I'm not sure if these goals have been committed to the highest extent, but I think establishing these goals and policies, they've shown that they're committed to and determined to solve the issue.
I mean, yeah, climate change is a pretty global movement, and I mean, it's relatively easy to contribute locally. So naturally, you know, of course, it's everyone's interest as well. But anyhow, like, you'd be surprised, and like China, for example, has like more solar panels than the US, I think, now.
There's also a lot of TEDx talks that have encouraged people to change their lifestyle, like you talked about in a previous episode, as approximately 50 kilograms of annual waste can be removed through changing regular habits and diets of each person.
I mean, you're true that we have a lot of hypothetical stuff that we can additionally implement. I mean, it's already an action, is it not? Well, in terms of like a promise or goal, I guess, as I said. But the EU in general is a great initiator to climate change and I guess also natural related disasters, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, I guess, small, but I guess significant discoveries as well that's happening little by little. I'm not going to say that we should rely on like new technology to solve our problem, but I know that actually in our pretty recent biology class, actually, we were presented with a group of scientists that were able to create, I guess, GMO plant fiber that was able to digest unnatural carbon and make it natural for the plants to actually utilize. So like these kind of stuff, they add up and they are happening. So I guess what I'm saying is we are advancing, whether or not, slowly but surely. Along with technology, there's technology can't replace the amount of commitment we need into the subject. So don't let that fool anyone. But either way, if you're aiming to be a scientist or already are, help advance technology. I mean, we're all for it. If there is a miracle technology to solve this whole problem, I mean, we'll gladly take it, but those chances are real low. No single technology can do that. It's a fight that will still last even after this podcast ends. I guess last word for the viewer. Recollect everything that we've talked about if you even watched any other episodes than this one. I'd say enlightening anything new. I think we've gave a general idea on what someone should do and what to look out for. And wrapping it up in one sentence, vote by locally, and I guess positively reinforce others to do the same would be my three top priority in contributing.
I think that's quite good, and it. I really hope that you enjoy to our episodes, and you did, and listened to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will conclude our final episode of our podcast. Thanks for listening and bearing with our amateur microphones and amateur presentations as podcast people.